This episode brought to you by Origins, origination technology for today's credit unions. On the show today, we have the Brainy Business's very own Melina Palmer. She is back on the show talking about her new book, and that is entitled What Your Employees Need and Can't Tell You, and it all deals with adapting to change with the science of behavioral economics. Really great stuff here from Melina, so check it out. Mike Lawson here with CU Broadcast. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have one of our favorite recurring guests who is, an author, a speaker, a former credit union executive. She's got the whole game, the whole nine yards here. We have Melina Palmer from The Brainy Business. Melina, how are you today? Good to see you again.
Oh, I'm fantastic and always wonderful to see you, Mike.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And it seems like it was just yesterday we were in Chicago at Co-op's Think Conference. I mean, I was just like, oh my gosh, that seems like just last week we were there and we were talking. So, yeah, we were talking about a lot. You were talking about some really cool stuff there, and we're going to talk about some cool stuff today because you have a new book coming out entitled What Your Employees Need But Can't Tell You. And they can't tell you. Or you can hold the book up. Let me see. Can we see?
I know.
What your employees need and they can't tell you. So yeah.
You can see it's not the actual books are here yet.
A very thin book, Melina.
I know.
That is some
the real
reading.
Book is not that thin, but you know, it's it comes out. I get my author copies later this week.
Yay. Okay, cool. Oh, very exciting. Very exciting. So, and kind of the second part of the title is adapting to change with the science of behavioral economics, which you are the master at for sure. So, and we always enjoy having you back on. So, without further ado, let's just dive in here. Can you give us a quick overview of your new book and what it's all about and stuff? And then we'll dive into a couple of details.
Yeah, absolutely. So the new book, as kind of says from the title, is talking about how change impacts our brains. And we in business, you know, credit unions and everyone else are constantly dealing with change, and we're needing people within our organizations to take on a lot of change.
Right.
In an organization, you tend to think that all that matters when it comes to change is the really big stuff, right?
Yeah.
CEO succession planning, mergers, core conversions, and everything else is just sort of, you know, something that's going on, right? And we don't need to worry about that. That shouldn't impact people.
Mm-hmm.
But in the way that the brain actually approaches change, those micro moments, those tiny little things have as much impact on us as the really big stuff does.
Really?
And so in the book is talking about how to think about change in a different way. And really, I make the argument that every conversation and interaction is a one of change. So you're either actually having a conversation about a change right now, you're in the wake of a change that has already happened, or you are planning for change yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
And there are constant ripples all around. So if you are approaching with this idea of change in those micro moments,
mm-hmm.
then it can allow you to have it so that change actually comes quite easily and naturally to people on teams, instead of that where we would all say change is hard, but it doesn't have to be.
Well, and you also mentioned in there that there's a stat in there. What was it? We all make, 35,000 decisions a day? I mean, talk about stuff coming at you, you know, from every angle. And then also, oh, yeah, there's this thing called change that we have to deal with as well. So how do we handle that type of stuff? Because it sounds like planning might be the best way to do it. I'm just kind of grasping at straws here.
Planning is good.
Okay.
And so as you were saying, the average person makes 35,000 decisions every single day, remotely conscious. So that's not like breathe in, breathe out, right? That's actual choices we're making. And so the vast majority of those have to be done on a subconscious level, which is using predictability and status quo and rules of things that have worked well for it in the past. Mm-hmm. To help make decisions. And again, those are those micro moments.
So
if a change is presented in a way that something feels a little bit off,
mm-hmm.
our brain can become biased and hate it all, you know, all the way down the line because of the way that came across. So here's an example. You can imagine, you know, you have a manager that calls everyone and kind of like rubbing their eyes and say, oh, okay, everybody, like, gather around. I know you're not going to like this. I know everyone's going to hate having to deal with this, but don't shoot the messenger. just got a call from, you know, the guys and gals up at corporate, and like, we're going to have to change to a new software system. I know it's a pain, but like, I need you to get on board because we just got to get moving. Okay.
Right.
Right. Like, we've all been in that meeting, and everyone has now been set up to think this is a terrible idea. I'm going to hate it. I shouldn't like it. No one else likes it. We're a herding species. So we think, okay, this is bad. And all down the line, that team will think this is a bad thing and potentially rebel against it. Whereas if it was presented instead by someone saying, hey, you know, I know I've heard you all over the years talk about the current system we have and that it can be cumbersome. Mm-hmm. There are way too many steps. It's slow. And we've heard you, and the team at corporate is coming up with this great new system that's going to be more efficient. You're going to be able to get through your processing faster. It's going to up your sales, whatever else. And there's 30 days for anyone who wants to be able to provide feedback, to be part of that process, to help create this. Really exciting. Let me know if you want to be a part of it. And thankfully, we'll be running this even by the end of the quarter, which is super great, right? Yeah. Same system, same change, all the same stuff. Two teams are going in very different directions on that because of the way it's presented. So in the book, I have a framework that's called It's Not About the Cookie, which is the same framework I use for pricing as I do for change. And that change isn't about change. It's about all the stuff that happens in the way that that change is presented. Mm-hmm. And so when we're more thoughtful about the outcome we're looking to get, where people are now and how to kind of get them along the path, we can present change in a way that, again, makes it easy, even for people that don't report to you, which is arguably more difficult to influence people who aren't forced to do what you say.
And it sounds like parenting as well. As you're talking, I'm like, it's all how you present something to your kids, you know, so.
Definitely. I always use examples from the kids. And in the original episode I did on change management 4 years ago on the podcast, more than that, that has now turned into this book. I talk about my daughter, how she, you know, it's not wanting to brush her teeth when you tell her, you know, or not wanting to have her hair up. And when you would just walk by with a brush and she'd say, no piggies was when she was like three. Right. And you say, no, that's fine. And then say, but if you say, do you want an Elsa braid? Yes.
Oh,
no. I don't want piggies. Do you want an Elsa braid? Yes.
Yeah.
Right. That's done. Or if you make it about what color hair tie do you want? Which bow do you want today? Mm-hmm. It's not even a conversation about it, whether or not your hair is up. It's which pretty thing do you want? I'm able to tackle that, you know, while she's a little bit distracted and she's excited about having her hair up and the pretty bow when it wasn't, you know, a question about, do you want your hair up or not?
Mm-hmm. It's all in the presentation. Oh my gosh. Hit the nail on the head for sure. So the book is divided into three parts: big plans and micro moments, like you mentioned before, biases and concepts, and change framework. So can you briefly kind of share kind of summaries of each of these sections and then why you set it up this way?
For sure. So I will say all of my books in that, you know, the first two and something I intend to keep is that we always talk about how the brain really works at the beginning. So understanding the brain, those 35,000 decisions like we're talking about, all that comes first to help make sure that people are coming in at the right spot. So regardless of your knowledge of behavioral science, you're able to jump in. Part two in this book is then looking at the biases and heuristics that the brain is using in a work context. So there are hundreds of these. I chose a select few to include in the book, and it's broken actually. So part two is in three parts as well. So we talk about we go through a process here of things that you would hear at work a lot, like that's not fair, or he always hits his goals, just do what he does, or 3 days, we'll do it in two, right? These sorts of things that come up and being able to then break down kind of what's happening there and ways that we can be thinking about different concepts to leverage and some things and biases we might want to sidestep that could be problematic for us. Right. But looking at them kind of zoned in, right? We're really kind of focused in. And then part three, once we've learned about these concepts and the biases that are going to be in our way, then we're able to look at the full framework and how we can go to be applying and understanding the pieces of the it's not about the cookie mm-hmm. and how you can use that yourself.
So it's almost kind of like a playbook, you know?
Yes.
So of kind of helping managers, helping bosses or leaders, that type of stuff, lead more effectively, especially through change of what we're going through right now. I mean, my gosh, the change that we have, I mean, this goes without saying, and we've said it a million times, but the change that we've experienced in the last couple of years has been, you know, phenomenal. Yeah. So it's just, I'm trying to think of the word.
Monumental.
There you go. Monumental. Yeah. Unprecedented. There
yes.
we go. So
yes.
yeah. So, and I think this is going to be such a great playbook for folks out there who are going through, because we're still going through this monumental change right now, especially in the wake of what has just happened. So your advice to folks out there in kind of following this type of stuff. I mean, I think this is so vital right now, as especially as we kind of get settled and get and then again take off to what we can, what's possible here. So I just want to get your take on that. So, and kind of being an effective leader and mastering this art of change.
Yeah, I mean, that is 100% what the book is about and what it is intended to do. And I am glad to hear that that's, you know, what you're getting from it. And the point is really about helping, not just to, I think a lot of the problem that we get in not just books, but any advice or something you hear is very high level. It's inspirational, but not attainable per se, right? So
Siri,
you're able to...
Siri's interrupting you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Come on, Siri.
I
am. So you're able to be inspired and think, oh, I want to do that. I'm excited by that. And what do I do? Where do I start? I don't feel like I can go and do anything. And so in all the work that I do, it is my primary goal to make everything be really applicable mm-hmm. and to help make it so it's everything you need in a way that you can understand, but and not a lot of the extra stuff that you
don't need.
And so for anyone who is a manager to be able to take this on, and like I said, you might not have direct reports, but you're still needing to influence people on other teams mm-hmm. And things across an organization. In the book, I talk about a stat that I had come across when I was first doing, you know, research and working on the book.
Yeah.
And it was from Gallup and talking about how only over 80% of managers are not talented for that role.
Really?
They are not actually, I think it's 86% of managers.
That's a huge number.
Do not naturally have the talent to be a good manager or a great manager. That's not good, right? That's not somewhere we want to be. Yeah. And in their research, they found that 1 in 10 people actually has the natural talent to be a great manager.
Hmm.
Another 2 out of 10 has the potential to be trained to be a great manager. Okay. And the other, you know, 7 out of 10, you just should hope that they're not the one, right? But as we know from our, you know, 82-86% that are in there already, that they are not the best ones. At the time that this article was written, the advice they were able to give was, well, hey, good news. Studies show that most people don't manage more than 10 people. So the likelihood is that one of the people in your team of 10 is probably the one that's naturally talented to be the manager. So they're already there and then they can be your manager. Yeah. And like real world life, right? I'm supposed to demote the person who is the manager and say, hey, Susie's now your manager because we've determined she has natural talent and you don't.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Yikes, right? Talk about not being motivated and having difficulty in that way.
Yeah.
Or you wait and hope that the bad ones go and then you have the good ones, but now you have a culture problem. And how are you even supposed to find who is the naturally talented
That's
and who is
thinking.
Not? Like, what it basically leaves you going, well, that sucks. And okay, I guess I know this now and there's just nothing to be done about it.
Right. That's a pickle.
And so in my book, I'm using techniques of behavioral science for anyone who wants to be a great manager, mm-hmm. whether you have the natural talent or not. It's giving you some things to be able to look out for small changes that you can be making every day to be able to be that little bit better. And again, has that playbook. So anyone who wants it and is willing to put in the effort can be a great leader of people and make it so others can naturally adapt well in the face of change, which is really what we need in business these days. And so we don't even need to worry about natural talent, which, you know, we're not going to be able to pick up on anyway, but instead giving anyone the tools to be able to be a really great and effective leader.
Indeed. Yeah, that's so key, especially right now when we're going through all this change. I wanted to go over one little, there's actually a whole bunch of them here, but one that we were talking about before the recording, it's like when your manager or whomever assigns you that 6-month project and you're like, yeah, I got so much time to get this done. But then all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's the day before the project and you haven't done anything. And you're like, oh my gosh, it's panic mode. Oh no. And we've all been there. We've gone through, you know, maybe back in middle school, we had the science fair project and you'd had 8 months to do it. And you wake up Friday morning, and it's like, oh, it's due tomorrow. And, you know, I got a paper airplane, you know? Because and my whole thing is that time is actually the enemy there. That's just my take on it, is that too much time is the enemy and your brain just starts to spin like, oh my gosh, what do I do? What do I do? Or there's all the details. And you explain this fabulously in the book. So I want to get your take on this because this is a pretty common occurrence in today's workplace. So can you share with us on how the brain works in this scenario? And then maybe what we can do about how we can get our brain organized and get going in the right direction earlier than the night before it's due.
Yeah. So we have, there's a few things that kind of work against us in this case. And like you said, time being one of them. And the concept in behavioral science is called hyperbolic time discounting, which isn't a great name. I call it the I'll start Monday effect.
There you go.
Right? I like kind that of better. That same. When we think about ourselves in the future, we are, you know, studies have shown that our brain actually lights up as if we're talking and thinking about a completely different person.
Oh, wow.
So when I am planning to do that thing tomorrow, to the 12 things on my to-do list I'm going to be able to do, even though I only got 2 things done today, tomorrow is going to be a really great day.
It's been there, done that.
Yeah, 1,000,005 times, you know, right? And same for, you know, the credit union side of stuff, when people are thinking about saving and then they don't in the moment, you know, time discounting is a really, really big factor here. Mm-hmm. And I did a white paper for it that the Filene Research Institute has. So when we look at time discounting, that's something that's important. And we also we have an optimism bias. So we think that we're going to be better, faster, stronger, smarter tomorrow than we are right now and than we were 5 minutes ago. We also have a planning fallacy. So when we're planning for what's going to happen into the future, even though this usually takes us 5 hours, you say, I bet I could do that in 4. I don't know why I would think that this time, even though we're constantly interrupted by emails or, you know, if you're working at home and kids are interrupting and need a snack or you need to go drive somewhere, we don't factor in that time, even though it always comes up because of that optimism bias as well. Mm-hmm. And then the last factor here is something called bike shedding, which is when something is kind of scary and it's a big change and we're going to be putting a lot on the line.
Yeah.
We like to focus on something really small, feels insurmountably important. We can't possibly get to all these other things. We can't do the big thing until we do this one really important thing. Mm-hmm. And the concept was named because the researcher was observing, there was a team that had been assigned to design a nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
And they spent a ridiculous amount of time planning the bike shed. Which is of zero consequence or importance, but they had this inordinate amount of time spent on all these tiny decisions that kept them from having to do the big important stuff where, you know, if you mess that up, it could be a real problem.
Right.
So when we look at this 6 month out problem, at the beginning, we're very risk averse and we're looking at all the options of things we could be doing. We have all the time in the world. We can be planning for all sorts of things. And we think, oh, until I do this, I'm going to do that. And it can just sort of exist where we don't have to take action. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when we get down to the moment where anyone who said that they're really great, they work better under a deadline, you're wrong. I've said it too. And, you know, science has found we're less creative.
Yeah, yeah.
You are probably more efficient You're getting a lot of things done. You're making decisions because you have to, but they're not necessarily better. So maybe, you know, 6 months before you were thinking about how you were going to update the reporting structure. And why do we even present meetings in this way? And why do we have this sort of chart? I could do this. I could do that. And then in the moment you go, oh, I'm going to go in with the tried and true thing that we always have. And next time I'll tackle that other thing, right? I'll have more time tomorrow, next week, next quarter to make it better. And now I'm going to work on this. So the quick tip to kind of be overcoming this is we need to have less things that we're trying to focus on and change, because too much change is something that makes it so we revert to the status quo and can be difficult. So we need to know what's important change-wise for ourselves and our teams. And if we can prioritize one thing at a time, that's really important. This is the most important thing that we're going to be doing. And then break it into, so this is the big changes and micro moments, right? So then we say, if I do one thing today, what's the one thing I need to do today that's going to get me one step closer to this goal by the end of the month or the end of the quarter or 6 months when the project is due? So taking that thoughtfulness at the beginning of what matters and why, and then breaking it into its smallest possible components and just doing one thing a day. It's a tortoise in the hare sort of approach, right? So those little tiny bits, you will definitely get much more done than having a lot of nothing done on many, many projects.
Yeah. I do the same thing daily. But I found just, and this is just me, but I find if I just, I set like a small goal for myself initially, all of a sudden that momentum or those creative juices start going and I'll get more done than I previously anticipated. So if I can just convince myself just to get started, and here's that one thing, like you said, I want to get done on this project today, all of a sudden I got three items done instead of just that one thing. Cause my mind, I just get, once my juices get going, the momentum goes and I just go. So I'm like the Energizer Bunny that way. So that's kind of, that's how my mind works, but I'm glad you pointed out that one thing. Once you get going, you get going.
Well, and there's a funny kind of quirk in our brains where when we think about what we're going to do tomorrow, when you think about your to-do list, it feels bad to have one thing on your to-do list.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Having 10 things on my to-do list feels like I'm really busy and important. And I'm going to do these 10 things tomorrow. I feel good about myself in that way, where if I only have one thing, I don't feel good about that.
Yeah.
But let's imagine, so you have one thing on the to-do list, so you have 10 things on your to-do list. You go in, you get through three of them, you feel bad about yourself, and then you have more things on the list tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is probably not as important of work, right? If you have one thing on your to-do list, and like you said, then you end up achieving three of them, you are a superhero. Look at how amazing you are. And that can snowball into effectiveness into the next day. And even if you just got the one thing done because it was one of those days, you still check the thing off your list. It's a lot easier to say, I can't leave until this thing is done. Mm-hmm. I can't put my head on the pillow at night until that thing is done. Whatever that is, when it's just one thing, it's a lot harder to say, you know, I got busy. I didn't have time. And you say, no, I got distracted. I prioritized wrong. You know, you can motivate yourself differently to get that one thing done and know that it's the most important thing for you.
Agreed. Oh my gosh. There's so many things I want to talk about, Melina. I mean, we could be here for 3 hours. Oh my gosh. One more thing I wanted to go over were the chemicals in your brain. And you kind of have a four-letter acronym, DOSE. Dose of chemicals. Can you explain that real quickly for us? Because I think this is really important to let people know what goes on in that noggin of yours when change occurs. So I found this really fascinating.
Yeah, for sure. And there are many more than just these four chemicals, but these are our happiness kind of chemicals. Yeah. So we have dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. Mm-hmm. So that's the dose of brain chemicals there. And I have an episode, it's 123, you know, the 1, 2, 3 of brain chemicals is there on the Brainy Business podcast. So you can go ahead and listen to that if you want to learn more. But dopamine is important, most important when I talk about this in the book, in really, this is our motivation and anticipation chemical. So when we know something's coming, our brain will be releasing dopamine in a way that is either going to be positive or negative for us. And our brains like that anticipation feeling. Mm-hmm. It's really exciting. If you think about, you know, watching the movie, are they going to make it or not? Or if you're playing Candy Crush and saying, am I going to get through in the number of moves or not? Once you know, you lose the rush of the moment. Mm-hmm. And so what's interesting is because our brains do thrive on that, is it going to work chemical? Am I going to get there? I don't know how it's going to be. We're actually wired toward, we can kind of condition ourselves to have a habit about that rush of if I'm going to make it or not, because our brain actually likes that anticipation chemical. Yeah. And being able to understand that, so you can sort of phase yourself out of that dopamine, kind of detox from it or channel it into a different way. There are many other things that can give you dopamine, having that anticipation, or maybe there's a different chemical of, you know, camaraderie of the oxytocin and bonding and things like that, that mm-hmm. we could be working to up to, you know, compensate for getting rid of some of that, am I going to make it feeling, and know that that's not serving us well in business. So we want to approach it in a different way. Okay. And, you know, many other interesting things with brain chemicals, but there's one little tidbit, I guess.
I know. I find that fascinating. And your Starbucks latte scenario that you explained in there was hilarious, but we've all been through it.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. My chai tea is very important. Yeah. That's the, so we're built on habits. And if I see the sign, you know, if I drive past it every day, it's almost impossible to not turn in.
Yeah, yeah.
And trying to live on willpower to say, I will be better than this is just a really bad strategy. Instead, if I take a different route to work where I don't even drive by the Starbucks,
mm-hmm.
I don't have the craving and it was easier to avoid. So that mm-hmm. tiny bit of planning made a difference that can help everything just flow easier, where I'm not having to waste willpower not getting a chai.
Exactly. And it all goes back to what you said at the very beginning. It's all presentation. Your yes. drive to work is the presentation. So if mm-hmm. you go by the Starbucks or you go a different route, it's a different presentation. It's all in the presentation. So good stuff. Hey, I want to bring it, before I let you go, I want to bring it all back to credit unions. So what is the significance of this book to credit unions, or for credit unions, especially again in today's very unique labor environment that's full of change, this monumental change that we've been through? So what can credit unions, how can credit unions benefit here?
Well, I mean, credit unions are definitely, just like everyone else, you have lots of changes that are coming at you from all angles. And having a team that is well-structured and responsive to change in a way that's going to be positive is good for any organization. Mm-hmm. And in a world of, you know, fintechs from everywhere, and having to be adaptive and be more innovative, be more creative, not just being in those last minute, you know, stressed by deadlines and things. Yeah. You also have a culture across the industry, and this isn't a credit union only scenario, but it's one that you see a lot of people who have earned their spot in management based on longevity mm-hmm. or roles that are not necessarily people who are trained to be managers.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a leader. And when we look at that stuff from Gallup, and if we were to say, well, unfortunately, you know, that's too bad, we're stuck with people who haven't been trained in this and we don't have any option for them. This is something where you can be rewarding that tenure with your organization yeah. and have a path that people are able to follow, a training that they can go through, a way that they know they can be strong leaders that are going to help develop even stronger leaders along the way, regardless of natural talent
mm-hmm.
and that passion for the industry, helping to keep people happy and motivated and within the movement is so, so important. Yeah. And I'm hopeful that this book will help a lot of credit unions to be able to be even more successful into the future.
Oh, I hope is not a question. I think it will. If you dig deeper in this book, yeah, it's going to definitely have serious benefits to your credit union. So really good stuff here. So when and where does it come out? Obviously, it'll be on Amazon, all that good stuff, on your website. So, and when's the big date? When's the big date?
Yeah. So the book has been on Amazon and Target and all the pre-order for a long time. It is officially available October 11th. So depending on when this comes out, it might already be out in the world. And I guess here it is again, the, you know, what your employees need and can't tell you. Yes.
All right. Exciting.
So, yes.
Very excited for you. Oh my gosh. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much again. I know you are a busy, busy lady. So we thank you for your time today and your expertise. And as you're talking and going through all this type of stuff, and we've done many interviews over the years, I can't emphasize enough how cool it is to see your success. Because I remember when we first met, you were at Verity Credit Union and you had just moved into like Sherry Storm's position and you were taking that helm. And then, you know, then next thing you know, hey, you know what? I'm going out on my own. And my gosh, here we are, some years later, you are just crushing it. And it's so cool to see success stories like that and how you kind of keep it in that credit union ecosystem as well. So we couldn't be happier about that as well. So yeah, so it's really, really neat to see success stories like yours. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm happy always to come and chat with you. And it is fun to look back and to reflect. And, you know, credit unions are so important to me, even though it's not all of what I do these days. I'm able to take best practices from around the world and bring them in. And for everyone who's interested in, you know, trainings or talks or whatever, thebrainybusiness.com, reach out to me, Melina at thebrainybusiness. Happy to chat with everyone.
Got it. We'll put those links in the show notes, as well as the book links in the show notes too, so everybody can get right to it. Highly, highly recommend. Melina, thank you so much again for coming on. We appreciate it and look forward to the next chat.
Yeah, me too. Thanks.
Okay. This episode brought to you by Origins, origination technology for today's credit unions.